What's the sentence that you use to define yourself?
Practical optimism. There's a major elimination of fear for me, which is like everything's solvable if you have a simple life, if you've got simple needs, never high on your own supply. I think too many people that are optimistic are delusional. The reason so many entrepreneurs lose is they are artists, not operators. They're like, I'm going to make this peanut butter and jelly sandwich that nobody else has ever made, and I'm going to sell a million of them without thinking about bread costs, you know, without thinking about location, marketing, how to hire HR. Like, people are incredibly not practical, not operational. And so mine's not even a sentence. It's two words together that paint a very clear picture of what's worked for me as a human being, let alone as a businessman. Well, it's a really fun podcast for me because it's a little bit of a role reversal. Usually Jason is on the other side of interviewing me. Jason is a force in the business content world, and he has a new book. When I saw that, I said, look, you know, as editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, I think it'd be a good use for my podcast to see what you wrote about and why, and kind of shoot the shit on the current state of entrepreneurship. I got very fortunate, so did all of you listeners, that I think between that, which feels like a year ago, and now, the, you know, potential recession, or maybe we're in it, a lot of things are changing in marketing, the world's changing rapidly. So no better time to welcome my friend Jason to the show. Jace, how are you?
Hey, man. Great to see you. This is really fun to be on the other side of this. I don't even know how it's going to go. I can't wait.
Why don't you tell everybody the name of your book and what it's about, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. So the book is called Build for Tomorrow, and it is a guide to adaptability. The thinking here is that everyone is going through massive change. We as a society are going through big changes. Anyone in business is going through a big change. People's careers are changing. Their lives are changing. So how can we see opportunity of that? How can we navigate it in a way in which we don't just always see loss, which is, I think, what people tend to see when they experience change, but instead find gain? And this comes out of me having access to the world's greatest entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, Gary, you and I have spoken so many times, and no matter what we're talking about, this is really the core of it, is adaptability, is having a mindset in which new things are growth opportunities rather than simply a scary replacement for what came before. And I wanted to know how people are doing that, how they are finding ways to grow despite uncertainty, because I know that that's not something people are born with. It's a skill that you can learn, and I wanted to teach it to others.
You know, that's an interesting question. You know, so much of it's predicated on fear.
Yeah.
How do you feel people can be taught out of fear, insecurity, the judgment of others? This is a subject matter that's always been interesting to me. Half glass full, yes versus no DNA, and versus or DNA,
yeah,
maybe versus no DNA. What out of all these years, mm-hmm. You know, obviously people are going to read the book. One thing I'm proud of is the Vayner Nation that listens to this podcast shows up on the books. It makes me happy because I have reading issues. So I don't crush books, but so many of this audience does and get so much value out of it. It's why I keep writing them. Yeah. So I know a lot of people are going to get value out of it, but for the people that are just going to be able to catch this insight from the podcast, if you had to synthesize it, what stands out the most?
Mm-hmm. All right. So let me tell you a quick story.
Please.
When I started my career, I started my career as a newspaper reporter, small town newspaper reporter, like Gardner News, Gardner, Massachusetts, 6,000 circulation in the 2002. I don't know what it is now. And I got to tell you, I loved being a newspaper reporter because I had aspired to it. And so people would come up to me at a party and they said, what do you do? I said, I'm a newspaper reporter. I loved it. But a couple of years in, I realized, man, this is a tough industry. It's not really for me. I don't like the hours. I don't really like the work. I feel like I can do something different here. But you know why I stayed in that job too long? It was because I identified as a newspaper reporter. And if I was a newspaper reporter and I didn't have a newspaper job, then what am I? And this is something we all do, where we identify with the output of our work, with the thing that we're doing, which is fine, makes sense. But the problem is that it leaves us subject to feeling completely destabilized whenever change happens. I made the same mistake when I got into magazines. I'm a magazine editor. And every time I ran into a big speed bump in this industry, and I've run into many, I would be afraid because I'd feel like, well, if I lost being a magazine editor, then I'm nothing. Entrepreneurs, boy, they talk differently. They often talk. I was having a conversation with this guy, Greg. He's the CEO of Foodsters, which is a baking mix, baking company. And we were talking about a major change that the company was going through. It was unpredictable. It was a little scary. I asked him if he was freaked out, and he said no, because here's what he said. Our mission is to bring joy to people through upgraded sweet baked goods. He just casually tossed that off, but I realized, you know what? That's what we all need. We need a mission statement in which every word is not subject to easy change, in which every word is core to us, so that no matter what changes, we have something that does not change. We identify the thing about us that is always forward facing, that is always value oriented, despite whatever happens around us. So I came up with this phrase for myself. I'd love to know what you think is like the kind of core essence of you, but I'll tell you what I came up with myself is, I tell stories in my own voice. I tell stories, not magazine stories, not newspaper stories, not podcasts, not books, in my own voice. Now I'm setting the terms for how I work. And I find that having that orientation means that, Gary, if you and I, if we're done talking today and I check my email and entrepreneur has fired me, I don't lose the ability to tell stories in my own voice.
That's right.
So what is you do a million things. What's the sentence that you use to define yourself?
Practical optimism.
Because there's always a need for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm an operator, you know, I'm very aware of Gary V and all that and aware of why I do it. I actually think it's an exercise in operations. Creating brand and awareness leads to opportunity. But I also think that I'm deeply optimistic. I'm stunned by, it was kind of how I started this, right? Which is like, there's a major elimination of fear for me, which is like everything's solvable if you have a simple life. If you've got simple needs, never get high on your own supply, I'm not fancy. I'm from the dirt. I like it in the dirt. And then back to practical, I think too many people that are optimistic are delusional. The reason so many entrepreneurs lose is they are artists, not operators, right? They're like, I'm going to make this peanut butter and jelly sandwich that nobody else has ever made. And I'm going to sell a million of them without thinking about bread costs, you know, without thinking about location, marketing, how to hire HR. Like, people are incredibly not practical, not operational. And so mine's not even a sentence. It's two words together that paint a very clear picture of what's worked for me as a human being, let alone as a businessman and an entrepreneur.
And you know, what's really interesting about that is that now that I know that, I can think about how that protects you against both ups and downs, right? The ups being that you buy in too much on any one up, and the down feeling like you've lost too much. Because we've talked about things that you've tried, that you've invested in, that didn't work out, and you just treat it like a piece of data, right? You're just like, I don't want to, but
this may be why I love sports. Like, in life of sports, it's impossible to not lose. It's almost impossible not to lose within seasons. There are really, you know, the 72 Dolphins in a football season that doesn't have that many games. Like, it's just not reality. And, you know, I think with entrepreneurship, if you don't have the stomach for judgment of others, it's almost impossible to be in the game in a meaningful way, because entrepreneurship is around risk. And too many people are scared of that. Thus, they cast judgment on those who are doing it, sometimes over accolades, oftentimes envy and jealousy leading to under accolades. And so I'm just very realistic about it. Let's go back to your book. The book process, what was the coolest? Because there's a lot of aspiring authors on this, on this other side of this audio and video. If I asked you what the coolest moment was so far of having a book, just like fanboy, 16-year-old Jason, an email from somebody, an English teacher, a famous person posting it that you think is famous or cool. Like, for me, that would be a Jets offensive lineman versus somebody in Hollywood. Like what's the coolest thing so far?
Yeah.
Just so fun.
Okay. Yeah. No, I love that. I love that question. So I've had really cool moments. The book was up on the NASDAQ billboard. That was awesome. Michelle Pfeiffer just yesterday posted a photo of herself with the book. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I gotta tell you, the coolest moment, like straight up, was I was in the airport last week, flying to a speaking event, and I swung into the bookstore and I saw my book for the first time out in the wild. Yeah. I took a selfie with it.
Yeah, of course.
And then somebody, like a customer, was like, "Is that your book?" And so I was like, "Yeah, it is." And I started to tell her about it, and she bought it. Like, she bought it, and I signed it for her, for a random stranger. Wow. And I realized, like, I am feeling exhausted by the business of this book, right? Like, just the dealing with everything that is involved in selling it at mass scale. I love the individual, like, one-on-one. I could go out and sell a book by hand to individuals all day. I mean, I just did it yesterday. I walked into another bookstore. The same exact thing happened. Took a selfie with it. Somebody came up, asked me about it. I sold them a book. I can't get enough of that.
I love that. Makes a ton of sense. What was the most surprising thing for you as you went to level two, level three, level four of your understanding of entrepreneurship?
Mm-hmm.
What surprised you personally the most? And then with Entrepreneur Magazine and just your craft and your skill set in this, what do you think most people still miss about entrepreneurs in a world where 10 years ago, they were the coolest, they got cool.
Yeah.
25 years ago, it wasn't a conversation. 10 years ago, they got cool. And now it's kind of almost like such a normal part of life.
Yeah.
Some of the cool is worn off. It just kind of normalized. Like, what do you think the masses are still missing? Comma, what surprised you the most when you started to get your degree in really knowing entrepreneurs?
Oh, man. All right. So the thing that surprised me the most was that I had a mode of thinking that was limiting my abilities to grow. So, so check this out. So this Build for Tomorrow is my first book by myself, but back in 2018, I co-wrote a romantic comedy, like so off of the way, romantic comedy with my wife, and it came out on St. Martin's Press. And anyway, so it came out and I got these two totally different reactions to it from my writer friends. They all said, "That's awesome. Congratulations." From my entrepreneurs, they all said, "Oh, that's interesting. What are you going to do with it?" Because to them, the only reason to have written a romantic comedy was because I was going to build something on top of it. I was going to start teaching courses on stuff, right? And I realized that entrepreneurs and almost everybody else have a different way of thinking. Everybody else, including the world that I came from, has what I like to now call horizontal thinking, which is to say you do something, you put it out in the world, you move along, you do something else, you put it out, and you're building horizontally. Entrepreneurs think vertically. They only do something because it is the foundation upon which the next thing will be built, which isn't to say that it's going to be perfect or it's going to be straightforward, but they're always thinking about how every effort is driving future effort. That is not a natural way of thinking. But once you start absorbing that, it completely changes the decisions that you make and the way in which you conduct yourself. And so now I filter myself through, is this building towards something bigger? And I'm constantly revising my idea of what that is. I think we all make a mistake if we say, I've got one place that I'm moving towards and I got to make decisions that only move me there. But I do think that we should have a plan and then a plan to abandon the plan, right? So you need somewhere to go. You need momentum. You need to feel like you're moving towards something. But these other ideas, these other opportunities are going to come along, and you need to remain open to them. It's Malcolm Gladwell once told me, self-conceptions are powerfully limiting. And I just couldn't agree with that more. If you define yourself too narrowly, you will turn down
100,000%
all these amazing opportunities, right? So I wanna have an idea of what I'm building, but I also wanna program into myself the freedom to abandon that idea and replace it with another idea, but I always wanna be building. So that's what surprised me the most, the difference between horizontal thinking and vertical thinking.
Mm.
And then the thing that I think people misunderstand is that if you're on the outside and you watch an entrepreneur and they are out there and they're selling, they're building, they're really focused on something, I think a lot of people they can appreciate that, but in a way they also find it a little dirty. I think a lot of people see sales as dirty. You know, I was just on an Instagram live last week and I was talking about my book, and there was one guy in the comments who was like, "Don't forget, he's getting paid to do this." And I stopped and I was like, "Dude, okay, first of all, I'm actually not getting paid per book, because if you know how books work, you gotta sell a mountain of books before you make any additional money off. I mean, I got an advance, but then so But here's the number. Here's the thing that I think people misunderstand. Just because you're selling something doesn't mean that it's bad. In fact,
I actually think it's the reverse.
What's that?
I believe the reason my career has gone well is, and that I'm a good salesman and marketer mm-hmm. is I only sell stuff I believe in.
There you go.
When I was selling Empathy Wines, I just knew it was a better $20 wine, right? When VaynerMedia is a better agency than anybody else could hire for. I really believe that in my soul, and it's not delusional because the results have spoken to it.
And that's the thing that I said on that thing, because I said, look, if you believe that you have created something of great value and it's a value to other people, then it is your responsibility to make sure they know about it and have access to it and use
it. It's really funny. A friend, there was a really funny conversation I had with a group of friends where that exact theme came up and said,
yeah.
Gary, you're selling that. And I said, brother, you're asking to get paid to work a job.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you do it for free? Like, I don't understand. Like there's this very like funny conversation amongst entrepreneurs and non-entrepreneurs. I also think that entrepreneurs have done a very poor job in not communicating that people that are not entrepreneurs are equally as lucky to entrepreneurs, because if they have found something that works for them, like, I'll be honest with you, there are many days when I'm like, man, it would have been really cool if the luck of the DNA draw made me be passionate about being a number four in a company, because mm-hmm. the delta even between being a number one and a number two is just the sheer amount of responsibility. For everybody who's listening, if you're not an entrepreneur, but you have kids, remember what it was like to be the kid and judge everything your parents did and not think about anything, and now know what it feels like to be the parent. Like, it's just a totally different world when it's on you.
Yeah, that's right. And what people say about entrepreneurship is, if you could do anything else, then go do it. Like, you have to, right? Which frankly is the same thing that people say in media, the world that I have come from. If you could do anything else, then go do it, because it's easier. But when you take a path that's challenging, but it is also immensely satisfying, then those challenges become part of the validation, right? Like, they're part of the reason why you're doing it. And I think what you need most is you need to orient yourself towards that you are going to be able to deliver value to people no matter how, right? No matter how. And when you're able to think that way, and this goes back to what I was talking about before, is separating that, like, what you do and why you do it. When you are oriented towards, I can deliver value, I can grow, I can build, it's going to be difficult, but it is going to be the most satisfying thing that I do, then a lot of the challenges, they make sense, I guess, is the thing. They make sense to you. And I should say, I want to echo what you say, though, about the way that entrepreneurs maybe think that what they're doing is some kind of unique path that others who don't take it are lesser for. I think that we actually need to separate the mentality of entrepreneurship from, like, the having started a business, because people can think like an entrepreneur. People can have a goal and set out to reach it. They can try to build things for themselves. You don't have to have started a business to do that. It's one way to do it, but I'm not going to go tell you that that's the only way in which you can create fulfillment or the only way in which you can create value. I think the most important thing is that we are just aware of the value that we can provide, and we're pushing ourselves to constantly evolve and understand that newness creates opportunity, that when there's new out there, when things change, that means that people need new things, and you can step up in whatever role you occupy, and you can provide that thing that other people need, and people will love you for it. That, to me, is core to what entrepreneurship really is, whether you start a company or not.
I agree with that. Before we get out of here,
yeah,
I want to make sure I allow you the time to, like, talk about anything in the book that you think would bring this heavily entrepreneurial based audience some value. What have we not talked about serendipitously in this conversation so far that might be worth mentioning, and or even if it's not in the book, the general concept of, you know, entrepreneurship?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you like a kind of quick, crazy story. When the car first was brand new, when the car was brand new, turn of the century, people didn't call it the car. They called it the horseless carriage. And that was if they were being generous. Otherwise, they called it the devil wagon. And that was because they hated this thing. People didn't understand this thing. And they threw rocks at it. If a car went down on the by the street, people would stand on the street corner. They'd say, like, get a horse. They'd yell at the car. And now when we talk about why the car became the dominant form of transportation, the story we tell is Henry Ford. We say Henry Ford, he revolutionized manufacturing. As a result, he made cars more accessible and affordable to people. You know, that's true, but that's not the whole story. I learned this fascinating thing from, and I'm not just telling you a history story. I'm telling you a lesson that we're going to all apply to ourselves. So I'll get there in a second. This woman who had studied the history of the automobile told me that the big mistake that automobile manufacturers made at the very beginning was that they started talking about the car as a replacement to the horse. They said, get rid of Dobbin, your horse.
Right.
This car, much better. You know what? People hated that. People found that offensive because they loved their horse. Their horse was a member of the family. For generations, their families had had horses. And now here's somebody coming along and saying, I have a better way to do things. You are an idiot. Get rid of your old thing. And it turns out, and here's the thing that I think we all need to remember. People don't like new things. You know what they like? They like old better things. Versions of old things. Like better versions of old things.
And they're incredibly romantic of yesterday.
Yeah.
And incredibly, I mean, it's happening in NFT land right now. Like the amount of happiness from so many people that NFT values are icy reminds me literally to the exact same feeling of March 2000 when internet stocks crashed and all my 45-year-old friends, which seemed like 1,000 when I was 24, they were like, see, you know, just open up another. I mean, God, the amount of times I heard, just open another liquor store. Stop playing around with the computer. You know, you'll sell a lot more wine if you open a second liquor store. And it's just incredibly fascinating how much people fear new stuff.
But check this out, because yes, they fear new stuff, but they love better versions of old stuff. They love you to improve the thing that they want. So the thing that we need to do. So the thing that we need to do is we need to build a bridge of familiarity. Whenever we introduce something new to people, or frankly, whenever we are faced with something new ourselves, we cannot start with here's the new thing and here's why it's better. We have to start with what are you already familiar with? What do you already need in your life? What is the core thing that you are looking for, whether that's comfort or growth or insight or whatever it is, and then build from there. For the cars, what they did is they stopped talking about cars as a replacement to the horse, and they started talking about cars as a better horse. They started talking about cars in terms of horses. They named cars after horses, like Mustang and things have today. Started using words like horsepower, and they started to show people how this thing was a better version of what they already have. And I think that as entrepreneurs, as innovators, as people who want to bring new into the world, what we cannot forget is that people may not understand what we're up to. They may not understand the value that we're able to bring. And so what we have to do is check ourselves and not focus so much on how we have something that other people can't live without, but rather start with them, start with their problems, start with their needs, and build towards
I actually think a lot of engineers struggle with that because they're so deep in the science. I think one of the roles I've been able to play in my career is as a communicator has been like, no, we're going to break this down to why and how, it's a tremendous rant that you ended with that I really hope, heck, I was listening. I was like, you know, might just tweak a hair the way I talk about in my marketing meetings with these CMOs and CEOs who are petrified that television commercials are dead, right? Like, like it's very hard, even for the most ardent fans of TV ads, between social and now streaming, it's just getting very hard to believe that spending millions of dollars on TV commercials is a good use of money.
Yeah.
But you can see the fear and it makes a ton of sense. Where can people pick up the book, Jace? I mean, I'm sure all the normal places, right?
Yeah, all the normal places, bookstores nationwide, Amazon, wherever. Again, it's called Build for Tomorrow. I'd love if you check it out. And
it's called Build for Tomorrow, but then there's also
there's a whole subtitle.
Do that.
So the whole subtitle here, I'm going to hold the book up. Whole subtitle is An Action Plan for Embracing Change, Adapting Fast, and Future-Proofing Your Career. Because look, you can't, You're not going to be able to say, I know exactly what my career is going to be like in 10 years, but you can make decisions right now that are going to open the doors to the things that you're going to be doing in 10 years. And that's the thing you need to be focusing on.
Everybody's listening. I think you've got a good sense of me at this point. Even if you're new, I'm not a very tough read. Well, I'm a tricky read, but not on this one. I get the author request 700 trillion times a day. I've got a lot of great relationships that are serious that look like Jason, an entrepreneur. Jason's on the show because I have a funny feeling for a lot of you, this is a book that will help. That makes me happy. And I still believe that reverse engineering how people learn is the most important thing. And some people learn like me, which is more audio and visual. And many of you, most of you, learn quite well in long form books. And obviously, is there an audio book or do you read it?
There's an audio book. I did it. You know what? If you want a funny thing, because we're both high energy guys, I had in my ear the director of the audiobook. He kept yelling pillow talk at me because I was talking too fast. Pillow talk, like, people don't want to be yelled at. Pillow talk. So anyway, I love listen for the pillow talk.
Mine was more, I'm incapable of reading. I actually got better as a reader because of the sheer fear that I would walk into studio of like how long, I don't mind that I can't read and I mispronounce words and I can't read words that are basic. I struggled on the fact that I just wanted to get through it so right. I could go to my next meeting. And so that's really funny. Jason, I'm really happy for you. You've worked really hard. I've watched from afar. It makes me happy for you. It makes me happy for the people who I think are going to get a quality product if they consume this book or listen to it. And I continue to cheer for all the entrepreneurs in the world. And honestly, all the people that are self-aware to realize they're not entrepreneurs, but can get something out of entrepreneurial frameworks and mindset, which is what I think you spent some real time on that I think maps incredibly well to parenting, personal relationships, and many other things. So thank you for being on the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for your practical optimism, Gary. It really, it changes lives. And I appreciate the relationship we have. It's so great. Thanks for having me.